Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Suzlon Energy Limited Q4 FY25 earnings conference call. During this call, the company management may make certain statements that reflect the outlook for the future, which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on the management's current expectation and are associated with uncertainties and risk, as detailed in the annual report. Actual results may differ, so these statements should be reviewed in conjunction with the risk the company faces. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and if you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note this conference is being recorded. We will begin the opening remarks followed by the Q&A session. To be fair with the others, we kindly request each participant to ask no more than two or three questions. From the management, we have with us Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. Over to you, J.P. Chalasani, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Suzlon's annual earnings conference call. This year marks a significant milestone for us. It is our 30th anniversary. Over the past three decades, Suzlon has demonstrated resilience, innovation, and a forward-looking spirit that continues to guide us. We extend our sincere gratitude to everyone who has been part of this long journey, to our visionary leader, to our committed leadership, passionate employees, loyal customers, and dedicated partners. A special note of thanks to our investors and the analyst community for your unwavering trust and continued support. Talking about the industry, the draft notification on inclusion of the updating of wind turbine generators on the RLMM will give a big boost to the domestic supply chain with the local manufacturing of blades, towers, gearbox, and generators. Moreover, it also requires that the R&D and data centers be placed in India. As the most integrated domestic OEM with an in-house R&D, Suzlon is fully compliant with and well-aligned to the government's current policy direction. We are pleased to report that another record-breaking quarter marked by an all-time high order book exceeding 5.5 gigawatts, reaffirming our leadership across PSU, C&I, and utility segments. Notably, Suzlon secured 1.5 gigawatts as the sole winner of NTPC's PSU tenders, underscoring our continued focus on product quality and alignment with evolving market dynamics. Order book for the S144 model now exceeds 5 gigawatts, a testament to superior technology and strong customer confidence. We take pride in stating that S144 is truly a made-in-India, made-for-India product. I repeat, it is a made-in-India, made-for-India product. On the manufacturing front, our capacity now stands at 4.5 gigawatts, with both nacelle facilities in Daman and Pondicherry fully operational. We have also expanded our blade manufacturing footprint with new plants in Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, ensuring we are well-positioned to meet production requirements for the coming year and beyond. Turning to execution, Suzlon has set a new performance benchmark by delivering a record-breaking 1,550 megawatts this year, more than double the megawatts delivered last year. The industry commissioned around 4.2 gigawatts in FY25. Though 28% growth is there, it falls short of expectations due to transmission and land acquisition challenges. However, with over 2.5 gigawatts commissioned in March last year and April this year combined, signaling a positive shift in execution pace. At Suzlon, we commissioned 336 megawatts in FY25, with an additional 370 megawatts erected WTGs currently in the pre-commissioning phase, bringing the total to over 707 megawatts. With less than 30% of our order book comprising non-EPC projects, where land acquisition lies outside our scope, client-side delays have impacted commissioning timelines. To address this, we have prioritized projects with partial land availability upfront. Looking ahead, projects like NTPC come up with substantial land readiness, offer greater commissioning visibility for FY26. Additionally, Suzlon is actively pursuing a long-term strategy to mitigate land-related delays by developing an active project pipeline. Our OMS business continues to do well with more than 15 gigawatts capacity in India, with machine availability ensured above 95%. Renom, our new entry, continues to strive for customer fleet acquisition with assets under management crossing 3 GW. Our forging and foundry business started showing uptick in the last two quarters, and we expect to continue this trend in FY 2026. Our top priority remains the timely execution of our robust order book while maintaining the highest standards of quality and ESG. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, JPC sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As always, I would be using slide numbers 18-26 of our investor presentation, which has now been uploaded on our website as the reference point for my discussion during this presentation. FY 2025 has marked a transformative year for Suzlon, defined by remarkable achievements with highest-ever revenue, EBITDA, and PAT post-FY 2017. Our entire team demonstrated unwavering dedication, making this one of the most successful and memorable years in our journey so far. Taking you through the Q4 FY 2025 numbers, in Q4, Suzlon continues its exponential growth trajectory, delivering 573 MW, which is almost 2x on a year-on-year basis, with all financial parameters showing a strong uptrend. Suzlon recorded consolidated revenues of 3,774 crores, delivering a strong 73% YoY and 27% Q-on-Q growth. EBITDA for Q4 FY 2025 stood at 693 crores, marking a 95% YoY growth and a 39% increase Q-on-Q basis. EBITDA margin improved by 200 basis points to 18.4%, up from 16.4% in the same quarter last year. Suzlon achieved the highest-ever quarterly PAT of 1,181 crores. This, of course, includes the deferred tax asset recognition, which we've done in this quarter of about 638 crores. Taking you through the full year FY 2025 numbers, FY 2025 marked a key inflection point for Suzlon, as the benefits of operating leverage in the WTG division have begun to materialize. The WTG division revenue surged by 101% from 4,215 crores to 8,481 crores, driven by a 118% increase in deliveries from 710 MW to 1,550 MW this year. This operational momentum translated into a remarkable 392% growth in EBITDA for the WTG business, underscoring the strength of Suzlon's scalable business model. Notably, WTG contribution margin has surpassed our earlier estimates of 20% by 360 basis points to 23.6%. On a consolidated basis, Suzlon delivered a strong performance in FY 2025, with revenue surpassing the 10,000 crore mark to 10,851 crores, registering a 67% YoY growth. EBITDA is 1,857 crores for FY 2025, which is a surge of 80% on a YoY basis, with improvement in EBITDA margin to 17.1% from 15.8% in FY 2024. Suzlon reported a robust PAT of 2,072 crores after exceptional items and including the impact of deferred tax asset recognition, marking a 190% YoY growth. This strong performance reinforces our confidence that the company has firmly transitioned into the next phase of its operational turnaround following a successful financial revival nearly a year ago. We are pleased to report on our balance sheet as of March 2025 reflects a strong position of exceptional strength, with a consolidated net worth of 6,106 crores. Our net cash position has risen to 1,943 crores, marking an increase of 836 crores over Q3 FY 2025, which further enhances our financial flexibility and resilience. Our end-to-end wind energy model, backed by a fully integrated supply chain and a proven execution track record, with best-in-class service offers a competitive edge that's both unique and hard to replicate. Moving on, in terms of an outlook for FY 2026, Suzlon has made significant progress in operational excellence initiatives in FY 2025 and has got full support of various stakeholders, as mentioned by JP sir earlier. The outlook for the future looks very promising, with a strong order book in hand, proven execution capability, a strong management bandwidth, and working capital facilities tied up. On the back of all these pillars, as we look ahead for FY 2026, we are confident of achieving 60% growth across all key parameters in FY 2026 over FY 2025, which in any case meets all analyst expectations or estimates made by the about eight analysts that we have. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and open the floor to any questions that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital.
I'll take questions as per queue.
Good evening. My compliments on a strong performance in FY 2025. My first question is, if you could share your thoughts around order inflows for FY 2026, would it be possible to match or surpass QC deliveries and contribution margin for WTG pan out in FY 2026? That's my first question.
Sumit, we just lost you in between for a second. Can you just repeat? We heard you about the order book after the last of the.
Yeah. So my questions are on your thoughts around order inflows, deliveries, and contribution margin for FY 2026.
See, order inflow, as we speak, we continue to see the good momentum, and we are pretty confident the order inflow will continue or a little bit more accelerated compared to what we have seen in the last year. Looking at the current visibility, why I say that is, as you know, that we started now, the public sector has one strong segment, which is now almost contributes 26% of our order book, is opening up. As we all speak, there are a couple of tenders for 1.5 GW already opened with NTPC, and last year we won NTPC, BPCL both, and more and more those orders will come. And we are also in the process of discussing with various other people. Plus, our development pipeline, what we started, will now get converted into EPC. So on your first question, Sumit, yes, we continue to see the traction. We will continue to see the traction quarter-on-quarter basis on the order book. I'll again repeat my statement earlier that I don't think the order book, not being arrogant, not being overconfident, for at least the next 18-24 months, I don't see the orders becoming an issue for us. It's a question of ramping up the execution capabilities to meet the project readiness for supply of turbines. So that's how it is. And the margin you want to comment?
Yeah. So Sumit, on the margin for the WTG business, as we mentioned, we registered about 23.6% contribution margin. So I would say going forward for FY 2026, we should be able to maintain a 23% margin on a contribution basis for the WTG division. And in terms of deliveries, that was your next question. As I mentioned earlier on, that we are confident that we'd be able to achieve approximately 60% growth year-on-year across parameters. So I think, which is in line with most estimates. So I think we stand by that for deliveries.
Sure. Could you speak about the progress of the land development mode as a strategy to secure contracts in FY 2026 in EPC mode? How much can we expect via this route, and what progress has happened so far? And any groundwork leading into export opportunities for WTG over the next 12-18 months?
On the development side, Sumit, if you remember, been on record, said that earlier, that in the states of AP, Rajasthan and Madhya Pradesh, we started this, and including Karnataka. So we also said that, you know, we don't announce, but we get into these framework agreements for development of various things. So some of those things are now getting converted into EPC contracts as we speak. So therefore, I don't want to put a number to it, but you will actually see some EPC contracts getting announced out of this development pipeline in this year, which will keep increasing as we move on quarter to quarter basis. So therefore, that's one what I will talk about. The second one, what you said?
Whether exports over the next 15 to 18 months, whether you are...
See, you're seeing what's happening on the tariff barriers and various uncertainties, whatever is happening. Obviously, as we spoke sometime back, the geographical diversification after meeting the increased demand in India is always an option available from the table. And answer to that question is, would we be prepared? Yes, we would be prepared. Would we be doing it? Let's wait and watch for the time. But as 18-24 months, we would definitely be prepared to, in case there is a requirement beyond our capacity, beyond our whatever we can supply here, there is more capacity. Yes, we will definitely. But at this stage, answer is not affirmative, but preparedness-wise, yes, we are moving in that direction.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Puneet Gulati from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much and congratulations on great numbers. My first question is on your new product development. So you have bulk of your pipeline coming from S144. Where are you in the next leg of development for higher voltage turbines? And do you even see a need for that, or are you happy with this product at this point of time?
So we work in a different environment in India. Is we don't react to the market, we actually create the market. When I say we create the market, is you need a product to suit the market at different points of time. As you know that we have the concept of setting up wind mast every single year to identify what is the wind data for the future sites, let's say 2 to 3 years down the line. Even as we speak, in FY25, we had put 60 masts in different cities. And in addition to those 8 windy states, in fact, we opened up one more state in the eastern sector. I just don't want to name it, but so we're opening up. So these sites are clearly giving us a visibility of what product is required in next 2 to 3 years, and we are ready for that. Current product, whatever is coming, S144, is the product which can easily meet the demand of the current market requirements in terms of both technology as well as pricing. What you can expect is that could be a variant of 144 coming in, this platform variant. But for the next model to come in, it will definitely be there as and when the country needs in terms of tariff not going up. So like I keep always giving the example, most important is the tariff. So like in AP, I always say the example is that we sold 1,000 megawatts of S111 in FY17, but same AP today we can't sell S111 because the tariffs are different. That point in time it was 4.84, today tariffs come down to 3.6, 3.7. So therefore you need a 3 megawatt platform. So the answer to that is yes, the next model will be ready, but it will be ready as and when it's required.
Understood. That's very helpful. And secondly, we also keep on hearing lower wind speeds. What do you think is the solution? Is there a better product needed, or do you think that's what developers will have to now factor in their estimates as well?
No, there are two different things. The sites in future which are coming in could have a different wind regime. That's one part of it. Secondly, the existing sites where you already set up the projects, people talking about the wind is not coming the way it was expected when the plants are set up. These are completely two different issues. On the first category of a fresh site coming with the low wind, obviously the new product is required, which could be, it is megawatt is not an issue. Okay, because normally we think that 5 megawatt, 6 megawatt, what is required. No, that doesn't make the difference. what makes the difference is your rotor diameter and your hub height would decide the, what is required for the low wind sites, not the megawatts. Okay. So at the end of the day, what gives the lowest cost per kilowatt hour? And as far as the existing sites are concerned, wind, it's very clear to everyone that as long as you're taking proper estimates with data available for 2 years, okay, so therefore variability will be less, but still on the wind, the average would touch around, it takes about 7 year period where you get evened out and then you get exactly the PLF of what you envisaged for it. Here to your variations cannot be counted in terms of wind. The wind itself is a cycle of 7 years, which is known. In fact, even when we do the analysis, we do it for the entire life of the project, and then, you know, you will get the same at the end of it. But the quality of wind data when you selected a site becomes very, very important. So you got to have those wind masts, you got to have the 2 year data. If you have selected the site from somewhere where you don't have proper wind data and you made a mistake, then you made a mistake.
Understood. That's very helpful. And lastly, for your new upcoming orders that you'll be participating, do you see a higher share of utility scale projects or more C&I coming in on the wind side?
If you see today, our C&I continues to grow, while the percentage-wise, if you see there's a slight shrinkage, that's only the percentage-wise because our public sector has grown significantly. Otherwise, in absolute terms, the C&I continues to grow. We expect C&I, the growth rate will remain the same like what we have seen earlier. The public sector will continue to increase for us. And obviously, the bid availability will be there, bid projects on this, but that's the, depending upon the competition, whatever we can increase. But in order of magnitude-wise, the C&I, PSU, and the bid. I don't call it as utility, it's a bid, these things. In the bid, again, you have two categories of people. Utilities which are participating in the bidding, we'll continue to grow with them.
Understood. And lastly, one more, if I may. On the wind side, there is also a bit talk of movement towards solar plus BESS. Does that worry you at all, or do you think the hybrid product will still stay?
Hey, at the end of the day, you need to look at, when is the demand and what is the tariff, okay, from the point of view of the grid is offering today. And we have all clearly seen that in the solar hours, the tariffs are not touched to zero number of times.
Right. Yeah.
And also, if you see, it is not just the tariff alone, the grid stability-wise. Almost about 20% of the time in the FY25 second half, that is October to March, the grid has seen a frequency going beyond the norms. Okay? So therefore, obviously, there is nothing called during the period solar increasing it. Now, at the same time, if you see in the evening peak and other peak hours, the demand is going up. In fact, there is a prediction that there will be a shortage of capacity even in July and August. Whether it is solar plus BESS, it is or the solar or wind is immaterial. Which product gives you, depending upon when you want power, that is what will happen. So therefore, the whether the wind is cheaper or the solar is cheaper, or the best is cheaper is not the issue. The issue is at what point of time, what is the load curve, at what point of time you want power, which offers the lowest combination will continue to be there. All three will be there, coexist, but the design of the product would change depending upon what product are you asking for. Are you asking for round the clock? Are you asking for morning 2 hours, evening 2 hours? What are you asking for? But I don't see, to answer you simply, I personally don't see any risk of all my experience in the power sector of wind getting impacted because we have solar clusters. That won't happen. But combination will continue to be there.
Understood. That's very helpful. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mahesh Patil from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. So my first question is on this RLMM norms that have come in, right? Which mandate the domestic procurement of towers, blades, gearbox and generators. So just wanted to understand in terms of the capacity that we have or the procurement that we do. How are these four products, are we procuring? How much percentage of this is being procured domestically? And if there is some portion that is not, then what are our plans to do that?
Let me just give you the sector-wise to come to Suzlon specifically.
Okay.
RLMM, the draft notification which came on 17th April, doesn't just talk only about the domestic manufacturing. It talks three parts. It talks about domestic manufacturing. It talks about cybersecurity. It talks about having R&D within India so that you design your turbines to meet Indian conditions in terms of temperature or parameters, etc. Okay?
Correct.
Your question being specific to the first one, I'll answer to the first one. These four products, what you said, if you look at, first of all, the OEM capacity in the country, these are all numbers written to MNRE by various OEM. Back up to OEM capacity today is 20 gigawatts in the country. The gearbox capacity is 29 gigawatts in the country. What the different manufacturers, different component manufacturers.
Hello.
This is. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Mahesh, can you mute yourself, please?
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. There was some disturbance. Can you please repeat this capacity portion just?
OEM capacity is 20 gigawatts in India, installed capacity to supply turbines. The gearbox capacity is 29 gigawatts in India among three major gearbox suppliers. When I'm talking about gearbox capacity, it also includes SEZs, means within India SEZs. And then the blade capacity is 28 gigawatts, which includes 11 gigawatts of third-party blade manufacturers. Okay? Means they can manufacture blades for any OEM. They're OEM agnostic. Okay? And then the generator manufacturing capacity, almost about 14.5 gigawatts. Okay? This is the capacity what is available in India. Therefore, in our opinion, the capacity not being available, projects getting delayed is out of question. And the second is that the price is going up. These are two things what you keep hearing is out of question. Because the same set of people, if the capacity utilization increases, the prices will actually fall. Okay? So if today we have a castings business in this country, which is being used for 25%, if that 25% goes up to 60%, our fixed cost per component will come down so much, obviously we can offer much cheaper. And we had a 3 gigawatt of generator factory, which we sold off at some point of time. Even today, it's not being operational. Not even a single generator is getting manufactured because there's no demand. So these component manufacturers, if the demand goes up on them, the consistent demand is there, the prices are going to fall. So there is an adequate capacity. There won't be any issue in terms of disturbance in terms of supplies, or the cost will not increase. That's what we believe. And as far as we're concerned, we completely comply with these conditions. We have no issue with respect to meeting all those conditions, whether it is manufacturing or it is cybersecurity or it is R&D. We are completely compliant today, and we have no problems at all. And that's what we written to Government of India, saying that we welcome this and we actually support this.
Sure. Sir, one related question is, so you have mentioned that we have enough capacity in India itself, but when we look at the competition also, so that means they will likely not face any challenges. So, because what I'm referring to is that NITI Aayog paper wherein the compliance was mentioned as lower for some of the other peers. So I was just thinking, do we have any advantage, competitive advantage here because of this? Or, but you said there is enough capacity, so there may not be anything like this, right?
No. The advantage is that if it is a domestic manufacturing and a domestic procurement, we as an Indian company would, in India, will have a level playing field. Okay? Compared to some other people who are getting some products which they may look initially cheaper, but I don't think they will have a similar life cycle cost. So therefore, what would happen, this is advantage to us, is that we will be competing on the same ground with everybody today in the country. So that's what I look at this whole thing is going to be. In our own country, we will get the level playing field.
Okay, sir. Got your point. And sorry, sir, I missed that part where you gave guidance for FY26 order inflow. So, that and one related question is, I think we have a capacity of 4.5 gigawatt, right? So do we have it sufficient to meet this demand, or are we doing something on the capex side as well in next 1 to 2 years?
Yeah, 4.5 gigawatts is what can be supplied when there is a bit of an inconsistent demand on quarter to quarter basis. If there is a consistent demand with improvement in productivity, this 4.5 actually, without adding any further manufacturing capacity, can deliver 5.5 gigawatts existing capacity. But then, provided you have a consistent demand and you know that it's going to be taken, and then we can improve the productivity of you do a three-shift operations and these things, same capacity can deliver 5.5 gigawatts. But then what happens is, one quarter you have 1 gigawatt demand, and you know, second quarter you have 2 gigawatts demand. And if that variation, that's where we say that 4.5 gigawatt is our capacity. And we've been on record, and Himanshu also said a number of times, that for us to enhance further capacity if required, is we don't need to enhance the natural capacity. It's a question of the blades. You can always add more molds. So which is not not a high capex, it is not a capex intensive or not it meets the time. So therefore, if there's a demand, capacity is not a constraint for us.
Okay, sir. Got it. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepak Gupta from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for taking my question. My first question is on the guidance that you've given for FY26 in your opening remarks. Did I hear it correct that you're looking at 50% growth across all operating parameters? And if you could specify, what operating parameters are you specifying?
So, hi, Deepak. We mentioned that we're looking at about 60% growth across the parameters. So, be it RR, as we call it, or deliveries, or revenue, EBITDA, normalized PAT, of course, not taking into account the one-off DTA. Across all these parameters, we are confident of a 60% growth from in 26 over 25.
Only exception would be COD, which would be much higher than 60%, because obviously this year was a low year for us. That's the only exception, which we'll have multiple times more than what we've done this year.
And what is the current deferred tax asset on the balance sheet?
So currently we've created a deferred tax asset of about 638 crores in this quarter. So we've created this on the back of assessed losses. So assessed losses in the books are about 2,500 crores. So clearly, as per the Ind AS 12, which provides that, you know, now that there is a absolute certainty of profits in FY26 for the corporation, based on the assessed losses that we have, we've taken the DTA at 638 crores. Of course, there is additional losses that are available in the books, but those are not assessed as yet. As and when those assessments get completed, and based on how the company tracks along, there could be a possibility of creating further DTA as well.
Understand. So therefore, there will be likelihood of no tax liability for the next 3 years.
I won't say 3 years. I mean, you know, clearly the DTA that we've created would start getting charged into the P&L from Q1 of this financial year itself. So whilst it will be a P&L charge, there won't be a cash outflow. You know, basis the performance in FY26, our belief is that a large part of the DTA that's been created in Q4 shall get absorbed during the year in FY26. Of course, if there's any new DTA that gets created, it's contingent upon complete the assessments of the losses getting assessed by the department.
Understand. And just last question from my end, you know, as I look at your quarterly numbers, you've shown a sharp improvement in your EBITDA margins for the quarter, despite your contribution margins coming off meaningfully, largely led by lower employee expenses. If you could give us a sense, how do you see EBITDA margin shaping up on a full year basis, on a consolidated basis in the coming years?
So EBITDA margin on a console basis for the full year this year has been about, you know, little over 17%. You know, we would maintain that for FY26. We would also be around the same 17% margin for the full year FY26. Now, of course, when you look at the contribution margin, you know, that shifts, because as the WTG business volumes or numbers increase, which is a lower contribution margin business as compared to the OMS, the consolidated contribution margin would see a reduced number in terms of percentages. So if you look at our consolidated contribution margin for FY25, that's about 33.7%, which is about, you know, a little lower as compared to 36% in FY24. That's purely because we've doubled the WTG division in terms of deliveries in FY25. And as we move along in FY26, with the growth that we're expecting in the WTG division, the contribution margin will come down, while the consolidated EBITDA margin we'll be able to maintain.
Sure, noted. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shweta Dixit from Systematic Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. So my question is, what are your thoughts on a longer term growth trajectory in terms of delivery? We agree that we've given guidance of 60% growth for FY26, but if we broaden our horizon, if we look beyond FY26 and go towards maybe FY28, 29, 30, what could be the growth that is in your vision at this point?
So see, we gave a guidance for FY26, so therefore obviously FY27, FY28, as we move ahead, we see it as we see it today. Obviously, there is, while we don't give the guidance beyond the first year, but if you look at the sector that gives it directionally, we are at 51 gigawatts today, and then we want to touch 100 gigawatts. We can always argue that it will be 100 or it will be 90 or it's 85. Even if you take the lowest of 35, we are talking about an average of 7 gigawatts per year in India. So therefore, you can see that there is going to be continuous growth. Compared to FY26, expectation is FY27, the capacity addition in the country will be higher, and 28 will be still higher. So till 30, you will see year-on-year growth in the country's addition. So it's reasonable to expect that there will be growth rates, but what and how much is I don't think we are in a position to give guidance in this stage. Directionally, yes, we'll continue to grow.
Thank you. And the next question, just want to understand what's happening on the...
I'm sorry to interrupt. Ms. Shweta, can you speak a bit louder, please?
Just a second.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Shweta.
Am I audible?
Yeah, yeah.
So
you are. Go ahead.
I want to understand your thoughts on what's happening on the replacement market. What is, how is this market expected to turn around in the next few years, since a lot of older turbines are still in place, and what exactly is happening or could be expected in that market segment?
See, there are two types of repowering potential what we're seeing. One is you don't change much, you just increase the capacity by maybe replacing just the blades or the nozzle. That's one type of thing. We are working on a product for that, which can replace, can increase the capacity of some of our older turbines which are of lesser capacity. That we mapped, there is a significant amount of potential for that, and which we would see that tapping into that potential starting towards end of this year but picking up next year. Second type is that the repowering is really where there's a fag end of the life, uprooting completely the existing turbines, and because these sites are of high capacity, high wind regimes, replacing them with the latest turbines with much higher efficiency. So that will take a little longer time, because currently everyone is preferring the virgin sites because the cost of uprooting and their STU connected sites, whether we have a market for that. I think that will take little lag time, but the first one, what I said, repowering is going to start, and then we expect that to make some start this year, but we will see a traction for that in FY27 and FY28.
So any chance you could quantify this number in terms of megawatt?
No. Right now it's in the beginning stage, Sweta, that let's wait and see. That first thing is to make a start. Okay, so then we can start estimating how much will be for FY27, how much will be for FY28.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Agarwal from Sundaram AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I hope I'm audible. The three questions from my side. First of all, when you gave a guidance of 60% growth, even in the chart, given the contribution should be growing at more than 60%, theoretically your EBITDA should be growing faster, given your fixed cost will not be growing at the same position. Just wanted to understand where we are missing this thing. And secondly, on the segmental margins on the O&M business, it seems like that the margins have grown very sharply. Anything one-off in that, one should be aware of. And lastly, on the balance sheet, there has been a very sharp increase in contract liabilities. What is the reason for this? Yeah, thanks.
So, hi, Ashish. So, to answer your first question on the 60%, you know, when we say 60% across all parameters, we meant a minimum of 60%. Yes, you're right in your estimates that the EBITDA growth could be higher than 60% based on the logic that you drew up in your question. So when we gave a guidance, we're saying that it could be a minimum of 60% across all parameters. That does not necessarily mean that it will be exactly 60% across all.
Because like I said, the COD will be much different, you know, commissioning of the turbine. Yeah. Capacity will be much higher than 60%.
So read that guidance of 60 as a with the minimum as before it. To answer your question on the OMS margins, if you look at our contribution margin on the OMS business, that's about for the full year 68% that we maintained. Last year it was about 66.7%. And if you look at the Q4 this year, it's about 69%. Now, of course, I'm not sure which exact numbers you're looking at, but also keep in mind we've also started having Renom, which would be a separate division of multi-brand O&M, that would take the consolidated O&M division margins down if we put Renom as a division also as part of the O&M, which so far we haven't. But there are no significant one-offs. The margin guidance on O&M business we continue to maintain would be in the late 60s at the contribution level and at about 40% from an EBITDA perspective.
What I meant was on the P&L, right, on the consolidated P&L, if we look at the segmental profits, it seems like that the segmental margins in O&M has declined from roughly 38% to 26%. That's what I was trying to understand.
No. That's the O&M margin. If you're looking at along with Renom, then yes, it would have declined along with Renom and International. When we report the 38% operating margin, that is just the India O&M. But when you look at the segmental in the Reg 33 results, that comes along with the International O&M also, which takes the margins down. But that business is very small for us. So you should just look at the India O&M, which is if you look at the investor deck and not the Reg 33 results, you will be able to correlate the two numbers.
Yeah, because in the investor presentation, it's given 40%.
My suggestion, would be that whilst of course I cannot we cannot ignore the Reg 33, but for the true segmental India O&M margins, please look at the investor deck presentation. And I mean, if you have, of course, any detailed follow-up queries on that, we can do a one-on-one follow-up call.
I'll look at the absolute number instead of percentage.
Yeah. And with regards to your last query on the liabilities, we've created about close to 900 crores of liabilities on the balance sheet. That is on account of two events. One is, of course, the additional stake buyout of Renom. As you know, we bought a little over 51% during FY25. There are certain, put call options that have been built in when we signed the original SHA. So approximately about 400 crores of liability, contractual liability has been built on that count. And another close to 400 crores has been built on account of the One Earth, which is the Pune-based headquarters that we have, wherein we have a put call option that kicks in about 12 to 18 months from now. So based on these two contractual liabilities, which are, you know, probably more than 1 year down the road, we've created those liabilities in the books.
Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Doshi from Dynam Asia. Please go ahead.
Hey, congratulations team on a superb set of numbers. My questions have been answered. So thanks a lot. Himanshu, I was actually surprised when you were referring to the analyst estimates for giving guidance.
Thanks, Dhaval. Learned from you.
Thanks so much, guys, and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Arun from Geojit Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Please go ahead.
Yeah. So, first of all, congratulations on a very good set of numbers, sir. I wanted to understand on, like, you know, why the cost, like the gross profit margin has come down in this particular quarter. And I see that the cost of raw materials is higher, right? So what is the reason for that? And also similarly for the finance cost as well.
So again, Arun, as I mentioned earlier, as the share of the WTG division in the console numbers keeps increasing in absolute rupees crores basis, the console contribution margin will keep coming down. Because the WTG business has a contribution margin of close to 23%, and that is growing at a rapid pace, while the O&M business, which has a contribution margin of close to 68%, is kind of flattish or growing at a inflationary growth rate. So therefore, when you look at it on a console basis, the gross margins will come down, even despite you know, us having a better COGS, which is resulting into a higher contribution margin for the WTG business.
Okay. And then the other question was on actually, like, you know, recently last Sunday, if you see the spot prices on the electricity market had almost come down to zero, right? It was, I think, the minimum clearing price was around 0.5 rupees per kilowatt hour. And this has kind of, you know, put the question on whether there is a green energy surplus risk that we all should be factoring in, which could probably lead to, you know, further, like, you know, curtailment on, you know, renewable additions. So I wanted your thoughts on that, and also, like, you know, what is your expectations that you have built for, you know, capacity additions for the upcoming years, say, till, for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, see, when you said that it has reached zero, obviously that's right, and in fact can even reach negative as we move ahead. But then you need to see that what point of time. Now you have a demand curve for 24 hours and 8760 hours in a year. What you're seeing is surplus power on supply side and less than the demand side is the solar generating hours. That's where we have the surplus, which is causing that prices to fall, and also causing the grid frequency to go up, as I said earlier. But at the same time, when you see the tariffs on the exchange, during the wind generating hours, it continues to be plus 450 to 5 rupees. Okay, whereas the PPA tariffs are 3.6, 3.7, the exchange is still, at that point of time, the prices are 4.5 to 5, and that demand during that particular part of time is continuing to grow. As I also said at the cost of repetition, that the National Load Dispatch Center has predicted that in the month of July and August, the loss of load probability is as high as 40% for the evening hours. Okay, and they are expecting the 25 to 30 gigawatt shortfall during the hours. So therefore, the demand continues to be there. And even if you see the overall electricity demand projections are anywhere between 6 to 7% to continue to grow. But at what point of time? So that is the reason sometime back I said that, you know, it is a question of when do you want power and what point of time. Accordingly, your renewable energy mix will change. Okay. So that is what is important. The only question of looking at exchange, a minimum price doesn't make any any sense. We need to see at what point in time the minimum is reaching. It's only reaching during the solar generating hours, but rest of the times prices are going up.
Understood, understood. Sir, on the guidance part,
Second portion is concerned that we compared to 4.1 gigawatts what we commissioned this year, we expect this to be north of 6 gigawatts in this coming in FY 2026, and should touch about 7-8 gigawatts in FY 2027, and remain at that or go to about 9 gigawatts thereafter. Looking at
Understood.
Looking at the current way the project development pipeline is taking shape from our various people, as well as looking at the grid capacity, what is going to come up.
Okay. Okay, thank you, sir. That'll be all from me. All the best for the upcoming quarters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you are requested to limit your questions to two per participant, as there are several people waiting for their turn. The next question is on the line of Pradyumna Choudhary from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi. So congratulations on the set of numbers. Again, my question is something which had been previously done, as well as addressed to a certain extent by you. It's regarding how would you compare solar plus wind to solar plus battery in terms of cost? Why am I? And also, when you say that it depends on requirement, what mix would be used? But given the battery is a storage project, so would a solar plus battery not really automatically solve for solar plus wind as well? Like, it can be used during wind generating as well, in case it's solar plus battery.
See, the solar plus wind hybrid tariffs, we all know, is still running around 3.35-3.4 per kilowatt hour. Okay, hybrid. That's the solar plus wind tariffs. And the solar plus the battery, the only one bid has been seen till now declared, which was for the existing solar connected people. They said that we need power in the evening peak and the morning peak for 2 hours or so, which tariff came to 8 rupees, which I don't think will move ahead. Simple thing to understand is that the pure wind is 3.6-3.7. In fact, even if you look at last three bids which got awarded, which got opened up and awarded in the first 3 months, or in this financial year, its average is about 3.76. That's the tariff of wind. Solar is now, let's say, around 2.55-2.6, with all this domestic. 2.56 plus the battery cost. So unless the battery cost is less than 1.25 rupees per kilowatt hour, solar plus storage can never replace wind. As simple as that. So therefore, I don't think that's an issue. But having said that, again, I want to say that it is not solar plus battery versus wind. It is all three combination, depending upon what profile of generation you want to meet your load curve, at what point of time you want this. That is what will decide whether which combination of renewable energy capacity you need to create at the back end.
Understood. Sorry, I just missed the number you gave for solar and battery. What's the tariff?
Sorry, come again?
So I just
solar plus battery is only one. Solar plus pure solar plus battery, one bid came up. Which is that they asked for the, it was open only for the existing solar connected people, developers, where they can put additional solar capacity and put the battery and supply in the evening peak. That tariff was somewhere around 8 rupees. So obviously, I don't think
it's a huge difference.
Yeah. But subsequently, the battery prices are coming down. So even today, I don't see the solar plus battery tariffs can be anywhere less than 6.5-6.75 per kilowatt hour. So let's wait and watch. But again, I said that it is not a comparison of that way. When you need power is what makes a difference. For example, now the CERC has come up with a draft, and then everybody has commented on opening up the connected substation connectivity during non-solar hours, where solar is already connected. When you do that, the wind can get connected. Obviously, wind also generates in sometime daytime. But then you put some battery there in the daytime, and then for the wind to build the battery, and then rest of the time pure wind. That is very competitive. So therefore, there are so many new opportunities are coming up. And again, I say that this is not one versus other. It is exactly like what combination gives you the cheapest power for you for the demand curve what you're proposing.
Understood.
Sir, your voice is breaking up. Can you please ask a question again?
I think we can move to the next one.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mayank from AMC. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. My question is related to the possibility of the import substitution when we talk about the manufacturing of the blades and the natural. So, how do you foresee that in future? And what all components currently do you import from outside India?
No, we don't import as Suzlon. Okay, first of all, we don't import. Our domestic component is anywhere up to 80% today. And even some of the imports we do is most of the supply security. But as I answered sometime back in detail on this question, there is much more than the required capacity in India of various components. So therefore, I don't see any issue in terms of, that mandate what RLMM draft guidelines came in to say that, all these four components to be manufactured in India. So I don't think, we personally don't see any issue, not just for Suzlon, for the sector as a whole.
So in that sense, what could possibly be a backward integration for us, if at all we think on that?
No, see, today we do ourselves nacelles, we do ourselves the blades. So we procure the gearboxes, and which is domestic. And then the fourth component they put in generators. Earlier we used to manufacture our own generators in a joint venture, which is we sold. So therefore we're still buying from the same company. So at this stage, we're not really looking at backward integration because for us as Suzlon, nothing is changing by this import substitution. It's not changing for us as far as we are concerned. But then if your question is that because of this is coming in, is there a potential opportunity for us to do some more backward integration? Possibly the answer is yes, but it's too early to talk about that.
Okay. And secondly, the R&D expenditure for this year, could you give the number?
So R&D expenditure, has been close to about, I would say, 150 crores historically. And going forward, we may be having an increased R&D expenditure. So I would say about 225 crores would be the R&D expenditure estimated for this year.
26?
Yes, 26.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shiva from Purnartha Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, please go ahead. Hello?
Yes, sir, the current participant has been disconnected. We will move on to the next question. It's from the line of Sunil Jain. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Sir, can you give why the interest rate and depreciation both have increased sharply in this quarter and how it is likely to move?
So, firstly, on the depreciation, for Q4, it is at about 93 crores as compared to 66 crores in Q3 of the same financial year. Now, the increase has been on two counts. One, of course, due to the Renom acquisition, we have capitalized certain items which over a period of 5 years we shall be providing for, and also there have been certain one-off small IT assets that we've provided for. Going forward, in terms of the depreciation forecast, I think it is safe to assume that with the increased CapEx on capacity expansion plus the intangible that we've created, writing that off over 5 years, it is safe to assume about 350 to 400 crores of annual depreciation cost going forward. So far as interest cost is concerned, again, we've started consolidating Renom, which has a small working capital, which is a cash credit debt of about 120 crores. Additionally, we made a small borrowing in our subsidiary SE Forge in Q4 of about 100 crores, for which there have been certain one-time costs, and the interest on that has been it's starting to get charged. So as we use our increased working capital for enhanced deliveries, plus these couple of items, the interest costs will go up. So if you look at our full year interest cost this year has been about 150 crores. We estimate that going forward for FY26, this will be close to about 250 crores.
Okay, that was my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question is from the line of Samarth Kishore from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes. Am I audible?
Yes, now you're audible.
Okay. So my question is in relation to SE Forge. Is it ready now to cater to forgings of 3.8 megawatt for internal requirements and for external sales in wind? And are we going to see the acceleration top line in SE Forge in FY26, given that this did not happen in FY25 despite sharp increase in delivery?
Yeah, I think in effect, Sumit, if you see, while you are right on an overall year basis, not much of change compared to last year to this year, there is some growth. But if you see the quarter three and especially the quarter four, you're seeing that increasing trend now coming up. So we expect to maintain that momentum of quarter four, and then obviously we expect that this year would be different for SE Forge. It will start getting into speed there. And to answer your first question, yes, it can supply for our 3 megawatt turbines, and it is also supplying, continue to supply. And we're also trying to enlarge our capacity there to even meet the larger diameters. Yes, more importantly, we are now looking at the non-wind sectors within India. Plus, they are also significantly concentrating on exports as well.
Sure. Because logically, I was thinking that if there is like 60% growth in deliveries at the minimum, then some of that growth should get reflected in SE Forge as well, because there is a significant portion which is for Suzlon itself.
I agree. I think what will happen also is that if this the domestic manufacturing requirement comes in, so obviously I think that also will, though castings are not put there, or the bearings are not put there, but I think assuming that they're all going to move in that direction, so obviously the that will benefit SE Forge as well to improve its capacity utilization factor. Not waiting for that, they are now looking at non-wind in terms of railways, defense, etc. Let's looking at the export market.
Got it. One question for Himanshu on CAPEX. You know, now that you are done with the 4.5 gigawatt capacity related CAPEX, IT CAPEX, so are you still going to have more than 4 billion rupees of CAPEX in 26 or is it going to come off? Now,
as long as if you don't ask her, wait, that when is the next model coming?
I think from a cash flow perspective, we've incurred about 350 crores of capex in FY25,
okay.
And as we've guided earlier, that it is safe to assume 400 crores of capex year on year. A part of it is sustenance capex, but also a part of it is whether it is R&D, IT, or capacity augmentation. So, whilst we are working on fine-tuning some of our aggressive CAPEX plans for this year, but certainly you can assume a base case CAPEX of close to about 400 to 450 crores also this year.
Got it. And just on tax rate for the full year FY26, I know that there are moving parts, but what is the reasonable tax rate to assume for the company, or how should we think about tax rate for FY 2026 and even FY 2027, where you book a normal tax rate?
So I think 25%, Sumit, is, I would say, safe to assume.
Yeah.
So as I explained on the call earlier, the DTA that we've created will start getting charged back into the P&L from Q1 of FY 2026 onwards itself. So when we speak again in July, you'll probably see a charge back of, or charge off of the part of the DTA in Q1 itself.
So you start seeing a positive tax rate as a percentage of PBT starting Q1 of FY 2026 itself?
Yes, that will be a P&L charge, but not a cash outflow for the company.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood. So thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today's conference call. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Himanshu Mody for closing comments.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, everyone, for attending the call. Our investor relations team will be available for any further detailed queries that you may have, and we look forward to interacting with most of you at either one-on-one or separate conference forums over the next few weeks. So thank you, and all the best. Bye-bye.
Thank you. On behalf of Suzlon Energy Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.